Warning, the following podcast contains coarse language and spoilers for the film and the title of the podcast.
Now playing Movie Reviews in 20 Qs.
Hello, good people, and welcome to the podcast Movie Reviews in 20 Qs, the show where we review a movie by asking 20 wonderful questions about it. I am your host, Sam, and I am joined this week by one of my usuals, Liz. How are you going, Liz?
Yeah, doing all right. You've got me up quite early on a Sunday, but other than that, things are tickety-boo.
I'd love someone to go back through all of our podcasts and count the number of times, like the percentage, of which Liz starts with a complaint about something. Yeah, I'm feeling a bit tired. Yeah, I don't know, but if I can't be a bummer. Oh, I don't really enjoy this movie, but yeah, I'm here.
Look, life is pain. Get used to it.
Exactly. And the person that I am more excited about being here, sorry Liz, but I'm way more excited about being here because we haven't spoken in ages, is Emily. How are you doing, Emily?
Good. Very excited. Very excited for this energy you're bringing with your 2 liters of Coke. You're so excited. Liz and I are the opposite energy of you. I don't know how this is going to go down.
I'm all hopped up. I'm out of juice.
Hopped up on goofballs.
Hopped up.
Ridiculous.
Well, I am very excited, Emily. You picked the movie. You picked Long Kiss Goodnight, a film I haven't seen since probably it came out. Has a score of 6.8 out of 10 on IMDb, 68% on Rotten Tomatoes, 43% on Metacritic. I already feel like all of these people can lick my balls, and that's kind of showing how much I enjoyed this film. But we'll get into it. Whoever's seen it the most recently, such as the person that watched it today, has to give a plot. Emily, give us a plot.
Oh, boy. Okay. Gina Davis is a mom. She has amnesia. She doesn't know what's up. She starts to suspect maybe she has a past that's more interesting than she thought. It turns out she was an assassin. She has to go back to her life of doing assassin things with her best bro, Samuel L. Jackson, the detective, low-rent detective, and navigate her old fancy life.
Yeah, that sums it up. If you haven't heard this podcast before, what we do is we review a movie by asking 20 questions about it. We start with 10 that can be applied to any film. We then move through 3 personal questions each before finishing on a Patreon question. The one we start with, compliment sandwich, one thing good, one thing bad, one thing good if we like this film. Emily, as you are a lovely guest, you can take it away.
Okay. Number one, good thing. Such an unexpected film. From the beginning when it's an amnesiac, you're like, wait, what's happening here? To as things start to turn, to the tone of it, the vegetable chopping, the shot glass. Like, it's all just so cool and weird. And they do a lot of dark things and they make jokes where you're like, I'm surprised that they went there. So fun. Like, it's not what you would ever anticipate it being, I think, anyone watching it.
That would be the Stacey answer. Stacey watched it and she was like, why are you making me watch this dated 90s rom-com bullshit? This is going to be fucking terrible. Stacey, by the end, was like, is there a sequel? She hates sequels.
I would watch 10 of these. Yeah. And this is a hyperbole sandwich. Other good thing. Gina Davis and Samuel Jackson, who would have known that them together would be such like A-plus chemistry, casting, fun. The way that Gina Davis gives Samuel Jackson shit, like his respect for her, it's just amazing. They're so good together. Final good thing, I love that she screams at a child. She basically tells a child to suck shit, her own child. And I love that because you know what? So many movies about women, they're like, but she wants to be a mother, and that makes being an assassin hard. Oh, she wants to have a kid, but the Russians ripped out her ovaries. Oh, and I'm like, oh my God. So she has a kid here, but she's like, it's not typical. I feel like the gender roles are a little more interesting, and she still is herself. She's not subsumed by this child. So I appreciated that.
Okay.
Yeah, we're just 10,000 shot glasses. What are you getting? Oh, you have hyperbole. So how much, Emily? How many more than 10,000 are you going to give it?
I'm so excited. I'm doing 20,000. I'm just doubling it straight up. 20,000 for 2 different versions of Gina Davis. 20,000 shot glasses for everyone.
That's awesome. On to Liz. 90s action queen Liz.
Okay, so I haven't really said a lot about my what I think about this movie, have I, team? I've been quite quiet on it. So now is the time that you get to find out. And I'm going to start by telling you that my first thing is shit. The dialogue was terrible. My first shit thing was that the dialogue was terrible. Made no sense. They just jumped into random things, that like statements that made no sense. It was just nonsensical and ridiculous. My good thing, so don't worry, I have one good thing to say, is that I thought Operation Honeymoon was quite an interesting concept for a movie. Like, I actually thought that was quite interesting, and I thought they could have done something with that quite well. But my other bad thing was that otherwise the plot was ridiculously contrived and just annoyed me from start to finish. And me and my partner were both going, why are we watching this? And I was like, Sam made me.
I didn't make you. This is...
I wish I had made you watch Showgirls.
Yeah, same. Holy shit.
What a gift I gave everyone with this incredible film. This is shocking. This is shocking.
No, I just couldn't get into it the whole way through. So I'm giving it, what are we doing it out of? Shot glasses?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 4,301. I'm pretty on board with the Metacritic team. No, I'm not that sorry. It's a shit film. Did you watch the same film as me?
Did you?
This is unbelievable. I'm very surprised.
Really?
Oh, 90s action. Oh, I love stupid nonsensical action movie. How can you love Independence Day but not like this? You know what I mean? Like, how can you love... It was an executive decision. No. A Steven Seagal
totally
movie.
Different.
And then
this one, she's like, they're in the middle of killing people, and then she suddenly goes, hey, should we get a dog? What?
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Maybe by your... bourgeoisie standards, like,
how can you like Die Hard and not like this? This is like,
actually, do you know what the difference is? The difference is that this is a spy movie, and I hate watching spy movies because they're always stupid. Almost all the spy movies I watch, I hate, because if you think about all those other ones, they're not spy movies. I just get so irritated by the idea that the CIA has hired some mercenary force to kill 4,000 Americans to get funding for... Like, I recognize that America has its problems. I just don't see that happening.
So your problem is that when you go to try and enjoy some escapism from reality, you just can't get out of reality. Is that the problem? Is that what we're hearing?
Yeah, because it's so far-fetched, because...
Is executive decision, is that a spy movie?
No.
Isn't that a group of mercenaries that are being, you know, doing a spy mission to try and get onto another plane?
Well, maybe like terrorists, mercenaries or whatever. They're not from the CIA or whatever.
Well, Kurt Russell and Steven Seagal, where are they from?
Aren't they military?
Yeah, she's military. She's CIA.
CIA isn't military, bro.
I don't know. It's all the same to me.
Oh, my God. Anyway, that is my view. I'm very sorry about that, but I'll try not to be too brutal.
Well, look, I had a compliment sandwich all set up, but after hearing Liz's compelling argument, I'm going for hyperbole sandwich now. So.
Obviously.
So, first good thing. Yeah, Samuel L. Jackson, Gina Davis, absolutely amazing. I completely agree with you, Emily. The other good thing, the pacing of this film, it just gets more and more insane as the film goes on. It's awesome. I love, like, each set piece is bigger than the last, and that is just amazing. And then the other great thing is the dialogue. Shane Black knows how to write a film, and he knows how to write some insanely stupid dialogue. Everything that comes out of Samuel L. Jackson's mouth is just fascinating. Like, it's lines of dialogue that you would never expect in any sort of film. So I'm just going to go completely contrary to Liz on that one. I did have a bad thing, which is some of the acting is terrible. Like, the guy who's the head of the CIA, like, I don't know if he'd ever acted before or if he knew he was in a movie. He was dreadful. He was incredibly terrible. But
maybe they got the actual head of the CIA at the time. They were like, hey, this will be some realism.
It probably was. I was about 9,000, but Liz has inspired me to add another 5 to it. So I'm going 14,000. And 12.
You do that. You guys can like it. That's fine.
You 100%. I'm just so surprised.
Which is also fine.
Yeah.
5,000 extra shot glasses alone just for when she ice skates after a car.
Yes. Oh, I loved ice skating after a car.
Oh, that was quite funny. Like, I'm not saying I hate it every bit. Otherwise, I would be giving it like a negative 4,000.
And I'm going to add another.
But so we're good.
I'm going to add another 400 for shooting out a window, or jumping out of a window and then shooting out a hole in the ice for them to land in.
I wonder if it's all, I also just didn't rate, like, I just didn't like Gina Davis that much. I wonder if that's part of it.
Yeah, you and everyone else, never... Liz.
Yeah, soz.
I love Gina Davis.
Anyway.
Anyway, let's move over to question number 2. What is it, Emily?
What aspect of this movie most reminded you of your own life?
I see it drinking in train station bars because Wellington has a cheap bar at the train station where I used to drink with work people. So I get that knowledge. And it's quite convenient, you know. You finish work and you just go down and have a beer. You finish work. I'd like to notice in the evening, you know, you finish work and you go and have a beer. And then you get on your train and go home. It's so easy.
That's awesome. The one for me is when the daughter falls over on the ice and she's like, get up, get up. And then we later discover that the daughter's actually broken her wrist. I was like, that is very brutal. Reminiscent of the number of times I've seen Fern fall over. I'm like, oh, come on, get up. And she's like, I've broken my ankle. I was like, no, you have not broken your ankle. You're perfectly fine. The other one I've got to say too is like, I've been very close to dying and I've had my daughter going, wake up, wake up. And my God, is it like bolting me back to life.
Do you mean hungover Sam?
Yes, I mean hungover Sam. And like, there is nothing more like getting an electroshock than having your daughter just screaming in your ear to wake up. Like, wow. It works.
I just related to the general aspect of confusion. Just that for the first part, Gina Davis is like, who am I? What's happening? Oh, no. That's how I feel most of the time.
I'm surprised, Emily. I thought your one was going to be that you've got a version of yourself in a mirror that tries to slit your throat every time you see it.
I just didn't want to tell you about my mirror person. That was my secret. So. Damn.
That's why this gets a bad review.
Fair enough. Question three, Liz.
All right. What is something that you notice that you don't think other people immediately noticed?
When Gina Davis gets shot through the window after crashing the car out driving on the snow, and I've got a little bit more to say about what preempts that, but when she gets shot through the window, her stunt double is like a very different man. It is probably different ethnicity, different shape, body, everything. But yeah, that's the scene. When she gets shot out the window, I'm like, that's not Gina Davis.
Do you think your stunt double got sick that day? And they're like, shit, we really want to film the scene today. All right, Steve, you're in. Come on.
There is a movie called BMX Bandits. It's Australian.
Nicole Kidman.
Yeah. Okay, she's 14, 15, and her stunt double on a BMX bike is an adult man, and she's like 15. And it is shock. It's adult man with a Nicole Kidman wig. It's like amazing. It's wild.
You think they'd be able to find a teenage boy, you know? Like, that seems like on a BMX, that wouldn't be a hard find.
I have a real one and then one that's like maybe misogynistic. I don't know. Gina Davis's cheekbones, oh my God, why are we not talking about them all the time? Her bone structure is crazy. Mm. It's incredible. I was like, why are we not always, why are when we're talking about Angelina Jolie, are we not like, but also Gina Davis's bone structure. Mm. But my real one, I didn't notice, but I did read it and I thought it was really interesting, which is that Sam Kane is amnesiac, an anagram for amnesiac.
Oh, like, what the fun. Hell? It's amazing.
Oh God, that's so dumb. It's so dumb.
It's perfect. It's perfect.
I love the dichotomy. I love the dichotomy of this. Emily's sitting in the video in between me and Liz, and as soon as she said that, both me and Liz have a very visceral reaction to it of joy and hatred. It's yin and yang.
Sam Kane was her identity before she even became an amnesiac. It's not like someone went, oh, let's give this woman a name.
It was from like another version of the story, like an earlier iteration of the script, which is like, I didn't notice that. I noticed like, damn, them cheekbones. That's what I noticed myself.
Them cheeks.
Okay. I noticed that she got a job as a teacher with no identity, no background, no training. Like, is that the 90s?
Who needs teachers? We need teachers, Liz.
I just really don't see that happening, at least now. I don't know if that was the case in the 90s, that people could just walk into the school and be like, you know, I'd really like to teach kids. Can I have a job? And they were like, yeah, well, just need to do a background check. Yeah, I don't really have one. Oh,
Liz,
that's fine. We'll see
Liz,
you Monday.
Liz, look at the state of America now, right? The people that were being educated in the 90s are running the country now, Liz. Come on, man.
Okay. Fair. Well, actually, are you sure? Because those people actually probably were educated in the 50s.
Yeah, true. 1850s. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
And honestly, it's just a symptom of all the sexism we have against men, which is like, yeah, a woman can walk into a school and be around kids. You're a lady. You want to touch my kid? Go nuts. Hang out.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, question number four. This is a Patreon question. Comes courtesy of our mate Julio of the Contrarians podcast, an awesome podcast that everyone should go check out. They take a film that's universally beloved or hated and argue the opposite before offering their real talk at the end. Julio's question, what's your most controversial opinion about this movie?
I think that the career that this should have led to a Geena Davis, like, as John Wick. She is like an Olympic level archer. Her career as an action star, I don't know how it was so undercut that we think of her in A League of Their Own and Thelma and Louise. Like, we think of her as just like a lady in lady movies. No. I think she should have been full out Jason Statham, Keanu Reeves, like action star still now. And it's insane to me that you don't watch this and go, I want to watch 80 of her. She's Bruce Willis. She's better than all of them. Like, where is her spy series now as a older woman? I don't understand. Who watched this movie? You, Liz, you watched it. The people watched it and they said, no, we don't want this. And I said, I want more of this.
Yeah, 100%. I'm with you. Give me a female Expendables. Have her as Sylvester Stallone.
Yes.
I mean, it's not that I don't want you to get everything your heart desires, Emily. They can make that movie for you. Just please don't make me review it.
Very diplomatic, Liz.
You're welcome.
Very nice.
See, I'm on the flip side of this. I felt that Mitch was like a misogynistic dick. Like,
oh, yeah, 100%.
Harassed female joggers. Yeah, but so that made him completely unlikable. Everyone's like, oh, I love Mitch. I was like, he was harassing people. Like, he almost drove off the road because some poor woman decided to go out for a run. That's so gross. And then he kept... Yeah. The thing that really got to me was that he just kept totally disbelieving that she could be a spy. Like, every time she'd be like, oh, well, you know, it turns out I'm an assassin for the CIA or whatever. He's like, yeah, but really? And she'd really just rescued him from that farmhouse. And obviously he'd heard all the gunfire and seen all the dead people. Like, obviously she'd killed people. He was like... Yeah, but really? Are you really the CIA agent? Whatever. So it brought me a lot of joy when she, like, shoved him out the door of the car. That was probably the best part of the whole movie.
Oh, yeah. There was amazing parts like that. That was awesome.
Solid. I laughed out loud at that. That was great.
He comes around later when he's like, I expect you to come. You'll come save me later because he knows she'll come save him. Also, the fact that we got to see him drive off the road and then her just being like, what the fuck's wrong with you? Like, you just go nuts for boobs. And he's like, you got a good bod, but you could see hers coming. Got time to brush your hair.
Yeah. Like, you see those things? He's coming around the corner. You've got time to brush your hair.
Yeah. And she's just like,
why would you brush your hair? Does he even have hair?
Yes, he does.
What kind of line is that? What do you mean you got time to brush your hair?
Like, I just love, he sets her up every time for her to be like, you're dumb as shit. She just gets to rip into him every other scene.
She 100% does. The time you brush your hair, he's basically saying you've got time to make yourself look even better for this person that's approaching you.
Yeah. I just feel like he barely gives the bare minimum and then everyone's like, oh, you're great. Let's give you a slot on Larry King or whatever. Like, it just...
Oh, yeah.
No. Like, he stole his kid's birthday present to the point, like, obviously stole all of them to the point where, like, the wife is like, you can't accept that. It's probably stolen goods. They're poor kid.
Come on, you've got to admit the line where he talks about his partner and about how all these bonds went missing. And she says to him, your partner set you up. He's like, no, I fucking stole those.
Oh, yeah, that was quite funny. Yes, I'll allow that.
Fucking hilarious. There was so much shit in this good. That he said that I was like, fucking hilarious. I love that Geena Davis called him out in the car, like you guys mentioned as well. It was funny because I've actually had that same conversation with a friend who yelled something out the window. And I said to him, are you expecting this woman to basically break into an Olympic level sprint, like two times as fast as the same Bolt, and then jump in the car and be like, oh my God, I want to have sex with you. Thank you for yelling out how hot I look out the window. You clearly are a man of fine taste who I need to sleep with right now.
Right. Yeah. What's the goal? Like, what do you think?
What do you think is going to happen?
Spoiler alert, she's not going to do that.
No, 100% not.
Shocking spoiler alert. Yeah.
My one, I put this down as controversial, but I sort of suspect that both you two are probably going to agree with this. But my one is that if you try and grope a woman who's driving your drunken ass home, you kind of deserve to die in a fiery car crash.
Yeah. I wish he hadn't been – he got free and wandered off. I wish he'd stayed in there.
I thought – did he?
I wish he'd cracked his neck like the like the deer.
I thought he died in that car crash.
Grabbed him. No, I feel like he like kind of like – like wanders out like, oh, well, I'm so drunk. Because drunk people survive car crashes because their bodies are just like
limp. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, that's true. God looks after babies and drunks because they don't brace themselves like sober people do.
Yeah,
I'd totally forgotten about that guy. But yeah, that guy was the most annoying fucking dick ever.
100%. You're hanging out with your
Look
mate.
Look at me. I can do the
Yeah. And then just grabs her on the tit. Like, what the fuck are you thinking? That's your mate's missus. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he doesn't even seem that drunk, and he just grabs her on the boob. What a dick.
Who's giving you a ride home?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Mrs. Claus, she's just the Mrs. Claus in the pageant, looking maybe the best anyone has ever looked, and now she's giving your drunk ass a ride home.
Yeah.
Rude.
Okay, maybe dying in a fiery car crash is a little extreme. Maybe just taking a random deer's hoof to the head would have been better rather than cheated. But
just a kick.
Just a kick.
I've had that happen to me once. Well, not the actual car crash, but the deer standing there and having to slam on the brakes really hard, like in the middle of the night. Like, actually, I was driving up to Flagstaff. Yeah, we're just like driving along and I was almost asleep. And we're having this really stupid conversation about whether Batman or Superman would win in a fight or something just to keep myself awake. And then suddenly this deer appears. I was just like, ah! Like slam of the brain. Fuck, it was terrifying.
That's awesome.
Anyway, that brought me trauma. So there you go. That's another thing I can relate to from this movie.
Oh.
So this movie's just too close to your real life, and that's why you don't like it. We hate in others what we see in ourselves.
100%.
No, I was thinking now it's starting to grow on me. Maybe I'm going to give it 4,305.
I think we'll win you round by the end. I think we'll point out all the good things that'll make you go, okay, yeah, that was all right. Anyway. Yes, anywho, question number five, Emily.
What quote from this film would be the worst to hear immediately after having sex?
Okay,
some
this,
good contenders.
This was quite easy. I've got like five.
Yeah.
Just
that
use
was the one.
One.
Way, that could have been my compliment. Like, yeah. Okay, so I'm going to say chefs do that while licking cake and possibly blood off your finger.
That's... That's pretty bad.
When she did that, I was like, oh, that could be like war.
My one is, it ain't over. You're going to die screaming, and I'm going to watch. Am I telling the truth?
Nice.
I had stop being a little baby and get up.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yep.
I had fuck it. Run for your life.
Another one had, well, why didn't you say so? Why didn't you hold on a minute while I pull that out of my ass?
When Samuel L. Jackson said, look, the last part's the important part, but when he said, you know, are you, so you thinking what I'm thinking? He goes, I hope not. I'm thinking about how much my balls hurt.
And I had continue dying out.
That's good.
That was so good. That delivery.
And then obviously there's the main one of die screaming, motherfucker. I like that one.
And life is pain. Get used to it.
Yep. There we go. Those are awesome.
And hey, should we get a dog?
No.
I didn't write it down, but the only other one I could think of, because I couldn't find the quote online without getting into some very dodgy websites, was, and the if you don't go to prison, I'm going to pay a bunch of guys to ass fuck you for the next 5 years or something like that. I was like,
Next 10 years,
next
I 10 believe.
Next 10 years. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
That was pretty bad. Anyway, let's move us over to question number six. What is it, Liz?
All right. What was the biggest dick move in the movie?
Yeah, I mean, this is where I also agree that Mitch was a bit of a fucking dickhead. And just referencing that scene, is Mitch employing a woman who's basically honeypotting men, right? So he's saying to her, I need you to go out, I need you to seduce guys while pretending to be a hooker, and then once you've got them and you've started having sex with them and hooking up with them and stuff like that, I'm going to bust in with a bunch of homeless guys and we're going to pretend to be the cops and then we're going to fleece them for more money. That is such a fucking dick move.
That man still had his underwear on.
Okay.
Because I looked. I was like, what's happening under there? Is that man naked? He had his underwear on, FYI.
Hello.
Thank you for telling us that.
I'm the underwear inspector.
The biggest dick move. I'm going to blame a child. that little kid coming back when Charlie's like, go, get out of here. And the kid comes back like, mommy, mommy. Like, what if Charlie had died and the kid had died and it had all been for nothing? She didn't even save that kid. Get out of here. Your mom, the assassin, tells you to run. Get out of here, you little dick.
Yeah.
Go.
Yep.
Yeah. Mine was the giant shootout at the train station. Like, it was so unnecessary. It was a massive waste of taxpayer dollars, like having to, you know, fix all that. And, like, it just was, yeah, if you were proper decent mercenary murderer assassin people, you would know how to murder another fellow mercenary assassin person. Like, you would know that walking in with a folded up newspaper that even I looked at and went, well, there's obviously a gun in that newspaper. Like, she was obviously going to react and do stuff, and yeah, that was just really poor planning and execution on their part.
It was kind of dickish of them as well not to trust Brian Cox's character, right? Like, he just yes. saves them, and they just were like, nah, mm-hmm. fuck this dude and cruised, you know? Like,
and now we're going to go trust this other guy because I wrote a letter about him once,
yeah.
so he seems fine. Like, yeah, that really annoyed me. That was another stupid thing I thought was really dumb.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about things that are really dumb, question number 7, what was the biggest load of bullshit in this movie?
One thing. There is one thing I will say this movie did wrong. One single thing. The rest was perfect, but this was such fucking bullshit. When the kid pulls out the matches, oh, it's okay, mommy. Don't be sad. I have my matches from when I light my candle for you every day. I was like, this is where I draw the line. Because number one, why didn't you say anything before when she's like, I need a spark, I need a spark? And you're just standing there like, I think mommy's having a breakdown. I wonder if I should help. No, I'll just wait. And then pulls it out of the cast so it didn't get searched. I was like, this is why she gave her a candle to light. Like, that was the most like stupid payoff of like, okay, so she gave her a candle. So she lit her candle. So she has her matches all the time. That was the one thing I will say went too far. That's
it was a little bit stupid, well, yeah.
Did she take the candle with her everywhere she went? Because he picked her up at the church. But like, so then how could she light a candle? Because she lit a candle in the window, right? So where did that candle come from? But that wasn't even my thing. My thing was that the grenade that got thrown was a fragmentation grenade, not an incendiary grenade.
Oh, God.
So it shouldn't have burst into fire like that. And even an incendiary one wouldn't have created that giant fireball.
Okay.
And I know that because my partner complained about it, and he also was struggling to say the word incendiary, which I also am struggling to say.
It's a hard fucking word.
Yeah.
It is a hard word.
If you're going to have grenades blow up with fire, then they need to be incendiary ones, not fragmentation ones, obviously.
I got some.
Obviously.
Okay. My one was that Samuel L. Jackson didn't die about 50 times during this movie, right? The bad guys 100% would have killed him a million times over. There was no point for keeping him alive at any point for these guys. As far as they're concerned, he's just some random. And even still, like, they probably would have put 2 bullets. Well, they just killed Brian Cox. They just dumped him in that, you know, like, what do you call that area? Like, that water mill, whatever it was. But they just killed him. Don't bother killing Samuel Jackson. But that being said, the bit where he flies backwards out of the window and he goes through a sign and then into a tree and then lands and then knifes a dude right in the head, I was like, okay, this is probably...
Yeah, it's relatively unscathed.
Yeah, relatively. And he's like, sweet as, he's all good. I was like, that was kind of a load of bullshit. But that being said, I mean, it's obvious that he's like partly terminated because, you know, he like pretty much dies, then crawls himself into a car and then rescues her in the car. And then he's alive from the end and on Larry King. He's the man. But still, a load of bullshit.
Do you know why he was alive? They killed him off in the first take of this movie. And then apparently in one of the, you know, previewing whatever sessions with like a viewing audience, someone yelled out, you can't kill Sam Jackson. And so they reshot it to make it that he was alive.
I agree.
You can't kill Sam.
That actually happened. I read it in an article. So I thought that was pretty cool.
You can't kill him.
You can't. He's unstoppable.
You can't kill Sam Jackson. I'm guessing it sounded like that.
Probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, question number 8, a brand new question from Liz. But what is it, Emily?
Yeah.
What did the movie either give us too much or not enough of?
Too much smoking. Everyone was smoking.
It was the 90s, Liz.
Outside, all the smoking. It was just, Oh, yeah, but like, yes, I get that in the 90s movies you see people smoking, but I feel like people were just smoking this entire film. Was it sponsored by like Benson and Hedges or something? Like, it was just ridiculous. I was waiting for the Marlboro Man to come out and just be like, hey, everyone, have a cigarette.
That's a good point. I'm going to give the Stacey answer because Stacey had an amazing answer for this, which I completely agree with. Stacey loves helicopters and movies. She felt like we didn't get enough helicopters. But what we got more than enough of was explosions. You're talking about the incendiary grenade? Fine. That explosion on the bridge at the end? Oh, explosion porn. I came. It was fucking amazing.
It was like Mortal Kombat level quality effects, though.
Yeah, I know, and that's what made it even better. You're not going to explode something that big and have Gina Davis and Samuel L. Jackson, etc., go up in flames, are you? You're not going to kill a kid while making a movie, Liz. Come on.
Well, you definitely weren't killing anyone with those incredibly fake flames. No.
I think that there was not enough. I loved the transitionary Gina Davis, where it was like she still looked like a suburban mom, but she was really weird about cutting up vegetables, where it was like she had these kind of skills. She was like telling her daughter like to fucking get over it. You know, like I loved that. I could have done with another half hour of this movie that was still that transition before we get from her not knowing who she is and just starting to figure it out. Like I would have liked more of that. In between.
Yeah, the golleming in the mirror was like awesome. I loved it. It was amazing.
I hated it. I thought it was really
dumb. It was so bizarre. It was such a strange choice. I loved it, but it was so strange to make it like this physical representation. It was odd, but I loved it.
Agreed.
Okay, so question 9. What deep philosophical debate arose in you during this movie?
Emily touched on it before. It's like, what roles did these bombs, because this and Cutthroat Island completely destroyed Gina Davis's career, like what roles did this deprive us of from Gina Davis? Would she have been Angelina Jolie in Salt? You know, would she have done other action films? What would she have potentially have been? What could have we seen her in?
Yeah, that's okay. Mine is actually the flip side of that, kind of, which is Gina Davis founded the Gina Davis Institute for on gender in media maybe over a decade ago, where she uses like real science to look at biases in entertainment, in the media that we're consuming, in how minorities are represented, and has done so much work in that space, like holds people accountable, like does incredible work. And so it's like maybe if she had taken off as like an action star, we wouldn't have gotten this because she's out there trying to fight for everyone to see themselves on film. But it also does make me wonder, like, why does a movie like this feel so singular and revolutionary to me and like impossible? Like, you don't see movies with women that are like, this is weird. This is a weird, unlikable lady that screams at her kid. That it just, I don't know. I mean, I wonder how long it's going to take her institute and her math and science to make it so that we get The Long Kiss Goodnight Part 2.
500 years.
Probably not in my lifetime.
No, probably not.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably not.
Exactly.
Oh, that's cool, Emily, because that's probably a pretty important thing for her to be doing. So, yeah, in that case, I'm totally fine with this movie being a giant flop. This is fine. anyway, my philosophical debate has nothing to do with Gina Davis and is maybe a little bit too serious, but I was wondering if this movie inspired the people that called 9/11 like a hoax or a false flag. Do you think they had watched this movie not long before it happened? And then they went, oh my God, what if this whole thing was just orchestrated by the CIA to get more funding? Because there were people who totally said that 9/11 was done by the US government, right? I reckon it's because they watched this movie and went, no. Oh my God, I never thought of it before, but maybe this is what happened. It's my theory.
No, you're not putting this on Gina. No.
Yeah, no, and like the craziest part about this was like at one point they start talking about the World Trade bombings, which happened in the 90s, and then they said,
we'll just do a terrorist event,
we'll blame it on the Muslims. It's fucking insane. It's like the most aged like milk part of this movie.
But that's the history of America. I mean, that's like just like there are conspiracy theories about people being lizard people, about women being men, etc. Like thinking that the government is doing something like this is like as old as time. True. And hating people that aren't white is as old as time in America. So it just is not surprising that this is who the bad guys were in this one.
No, I still blame Geena Davis.
That is true. If you look at...
No!
I think if you look at most of the bad guys from the 80s and 90s, there is a pretty clear bias as to what where they're from sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, it moves us over to question number 10. What background character had their lives completely ruined by the events of this movie?
The deer. That poor deer. That's actually the only other part of the movie I don't like. I don't like an animal death in movies. And this deer is just minding its business. That drunk is the reason this deer is dead, and I'm sad about it.
That's a good point. Liz?
I'm saying the family of the fake terrorist. Because, like, I know that it was, like, you know, what's called, like, debunked that he was the terrorist and stuff, but I reckon that there would have been a counter movement of white supremacists or whatever that were like, no, he definitely was a real terrorist threat, and then they go and find his family and, like, harass them, and, like, they end up having to flee the country.
Probably. Almost definitely.
Yeah, because people suck.
That's true. The one I had is that when we talked about the train station scene before, and then after she shoots that guy, all the other guys come running in with guns, and there's some random train station worker or cafe worker just goes walking past and just gets mowed down, like takes about 1,700 bullets instead of Geena Davis. And I was like, that person's having a pretty bad day.
Yeah. Fucking train station. Like, it was just so badly done. If you're, like, professionals, that was not professional. Get it together.
It's kind of funny that, like, that isn't enough for them to be like, here's a terrorist event. Here's a train station that got shot up. For America to be like, no. We need way more than that, buddy. We need way more than some couple of random cafe workers being shot up in a train station. We need something way more insane.
No, 100%. It seemed like everyone just blew past it. It wasn't, like, on the news or anything. Like, it just wasn't a big deal. And I was like, I'm sorry. I think that would be a big deal.
Maybe not in America.
Even if it isn't. Yeah. Oh, is it my time for my questions yet? Did you guys answer?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah.
Cool. Oh, good. Yeah, it's time for my questions. Okay, so, question 11. Who buys a woman a beer at 11 o'clock in the morning in a train bar?
I wonder if Sam and I are going to have the same answer.
We might
this.
Do. Do you want to go first?
Someone who sees Geena Davis in a train bar at 11
o'clock. Yes! I was like,
who says Geena Davis wants a beer though? Like, she might be like, I'd like a coffee and a big breakfast.
Well, you buy her whatever
beer?
She you wants.
Buy her fucking
buy
anything
her she wants. Yeah.
Like, she tells you to walk into traffic, you fucking do it.
She says, go in front of all those bullets that are coming my way, and then you go, okay.
Yeah, yes, please, madam.
Okay, acceptable answer. I would have also accepted Chet from Unreal, who this actor is, which took me like half the movie to figure out, but he absolutely also would have bought a woman a beer at 11 o'clock in the morning on a train bar. So the actor there, this is obviously his modus operandi.
My other answer was the same type of dude that thinks it okay to cause a major terrorist incident so that CIA gets funding. I mean, his morals are pretty fucked, right?
And he needs a beer to take the edge off. He's like, whew, I've been up plotting and scheming all night.
It's not even like it was a hot day. Wasn't it, like, snowing?
Yeah.
Oh, God, get her a hot toddy or something. I mean, fuck's sake.
Hot okay, chocolate, madame.
Exactly, a nice hot chocolate. I'd like a hot chocolate. Anyway, question 12. Why doesn't this movie ever appear on any Christmas movie list? I was thinking we didn't have it appear on any of the lists when we were looking at it for our Christmas movie ever, or Christmas movie ever, no. You know, episode that we did. I never saw it crop up. Why not? It's Christmas all through. If Die Hard's a Christmas movie, this is a Christmas movie.
Emily, do we have the same answer for this one, which is people are idiots?
Mine was basically, this is the false flag attack. They're keeping this movie from
okay,
us.
No. Thank you, everybody, for coming to our podcast.
They are stupid. How do you think this isn't? This is better than Die Hard. It's more
what?
Christmassy. She
what?
Mrs. Claus at the beginning.
I'm sorry. That is your most controversial opinion. This is
Geena
better
Davis,
than Die Hard.
You put Gina Davis and prime of his life, Bruce Willis, diehard Bruce Willis with his little loose toes in a room. Gina Davis is wiping the floor with him. She's beating him to a pulp.
Oh, yeah, no
she's
shit.
Mopping the floor with his bald head.
No.
Yeah, she's fucking
sacrilege. You know what?
She's dropping off the Nakatomi Plaza and using him as a mattress on the way down. Yeah.
And it's not on Christmas lists because people hate women. It's sexist that it's not on Christmas lists, actually.
I agree.
Okay.
I just think people are idiots. This movie is fucking awesome. And it's like, it's funny. That was going to be my deep philosophical debate. Why does Shane Black have such a hard-on for Christmas? Because literally every movie he's written seems to have Christmas in it, like Long Kiss Goodnight, one of the Iron Man movies, Iron Man 3.
Iron Man 3.
There's so many of these fucking movies that are all set at Christmas for him, but I'm like, ugh. I don't know. People are idiots. This movie's amazing. I'm watching this again over Bad Santa or Die Hard or any other ones I usually watch.
Yes, watch it with your family. You have children to pass these traditions on to. Make them watch Longest Goodnight every year at Christmas.
It was funny because they're like, what part most reminds you of your life? Fern will be looking at this and going, Gina Davis, that's my mum. She's gone from doting, caring mother to absolute fucking lunatic in the space of any, you know, like within the space of seconds. So, yeah.
Frankly, I think that's every mum because kids are fucking annoying and they bring it on themselves.
Which is my answer to your next question, Liz.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, my next question is number 13. Shouldn't her daughter be more weirded out that her mum's suddenly this totally different person? Like, her daughter just seems to not react at all.
So, yeah. So that's my answer. My daughter watches my lovely, beautiful wife go from doting, caring mother to, oh, just give me a break. Oh, what are you guys doing? Ah! And I tell you what, do you know what Fern's response is to all of this? You know, and then Stacey goes on to, oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to say, but you're so angry and all that sort of stuff. Fern's response, every time Stacey's like, oh, I'm so sorry. Fern's like, okay, anyway, but how sorry for you? Anyway, can I have an ice cream? It's like, kids don't give a shit, Liz. They're so resilient.
I wrote down the meaner version, which is kids are so stupid.
Yeah.
Legit.
That is the meaner version, but it's also true.
They don't know.
It just creeps me. That kid, yeah. I think, was a pretty shit actor, probably. She just had no, like, effect or, you know, like, she's just so, like, blah about all of it. And I was like, this all seems quite traumatic. I think you're going to need a lot of therapy, but you seem to be really chill.
Yeah. That kid's like, here's my emotional support matches, mommy.
Yeah, you've just reminded me of one of my favorite parts of watching this movie is that when Samuel L. Jackson's son pops up, I said to Stacey, do you know who that is? And she goes, no. And I go, that's Kevin Hart. And she went, really? And then as we were watching it, the daughter popped up and I go, do you know who that daughter is? And she's like, no. I was like, Alison Brie. She's like, Alison Brie? Really? I was like, and then after about 10 minutes, she was like, you're fucking full of shit.
You'd think she'd know that. I mean, has she met you?
She did. She did. I said 10 minutes. It was more like after 10 milliseconds. She was more like, oh, really? Oh, really, Sam? Really? Like, maybe in hindsight, she didn't believe me, actually. Yeah.
That does. It makes me think, you know, they always pair up Kevin Hart with, like, The Rock because he's giant. Gina Davis, like, 6 foot. Pair up Kevin Hart with Gina Davis for a comedy. Let's see what happens.
Nice.
Cool. That moves me over to my questions. First of all, yeah, I mean, as we've discussed, Gina Davis famously had her career tank after the failure of Cutthroat Island, and this, both directed by her husband, Renny Harlin. What other actor or actress should have never worked again after an infamous bomb? And I'm going to point this out to you guys. It wasn't a bomb, but Stacey's answer to this was Anne Hathaway should have never worked again after her first movie.
Stacey, you're wrong. I love you so much. You're so wrong.
Yes. Yeah. I agreed.
Fucking Hathaway.
We agree on something in this podcast.
Thank you, Liz.
Yay! We found some common ground.
On Anne Hathaway, an actress who wasn't in this movie.
Top quality podcasting.
Yeah. Well, what's yours, Emily? What's your answer?
Johnny Depp after The Lone Ranger. I think
yes!
He is. I don't care. People think... Amber Heard did bad things too. I don't care. We don't need to relitigate it on this podcast where the law falls. He's gross. He doesn't make good movies. He hasn't made a good movie in a long time. He dresses like an old lesbian going to a pottery class. He's not doing anything of value. Get him out of here. They're going to make more movies with him? No. What else can he do? He could be a drunk. He can be. He had his heyday. There are movies of his that I'll still watch. No. Get out of here. Lone Ranger. Him. The fact that it's him and Armie Hammer, and I'm saying him and not Armie Hammer. I'll watch another Armie Hammer movie. I will not watch another Johnny Depp movie.
Wow, there's some more controversy, and I 100% agree on Johnny Depp. He hasn't done jack shit since, right? He's been terrible.
Mm-hmm. The obvious answer is John Travolta after Battlefield Earth.
Oh.
Yes, your boyfriend gave you that answer, didn't he?
He sure did. I was like, I can't say that one because I haven't seen it. But also, like, I haven't seen it, but also I agree that John Travolta should have stopped making movies some time ago. So I was like, I back that up. But the answer I'm giving is Nicolas Cage from Wicker Man.
No.
Controversial?
You're not allowed to come on here and say that.
Okay. Then I will say The Mummy, Tom Cruise and Russell Crowe, because I'd also like to see them stop making movies, and I hate The Mummy. So, yeah. Don't give me lots of answers.
I think that Nicolas Cage is fair in that he should have had to stop making movies after that, but I am not mad that he did keep making movies because his career has come back around, so it worked out for him. But by law, yes, they should have stopped him.
Yeah. That's basically what I was saying. Is like,
support that answer.
They should have had that movie and gone, oh, no, we need to take him to a mental asylum or whatever.
Right.
Yep. Not the bees!
All for freedom of speech.
The bees!
A Wicker Man I gave a hyperbole sandwich to. That's one of my favorite worst movies of all time. That's like the Mount Rushmore. There's that and there's The Rock. I mean, The Rock, The Room. The Room, Wicker Man, probably Showgirls. I'm trying to think what else. There's quite a few other ones that would maybe make it. But yeah, I love Wicker Man. I think it's so stupid, but so good. The correct answer was Adam Sandler, but good try. How he's still making movies, I've got no idea. And you can pick Jack and Jill. You can pick... Don't Mess with the Zohan. You can pick Pixels. You can pick any of these major films he keeps making that are terrible. Grown Ups 2, any of them. How he still gets fucking films made, I've got no idea. What have cost us Uncut Gems, which is widely loved by some people, but absolutely detested and hated by me and Emily? Yeah.
Correct.
In terms of terrible films, but final
and I haven't seen it.
From
just like every other movie.
Don't. You don't. Save yourself, Liz. You don't want to see it. My next question. So, yeah, I mean, obviously the parallels between this and Jason Bourne are pretty obvious. You know, Jason Bourne being a guy that has amnesia but sort of wakes up and immediately knows that he's still got all his skills, whereas we get some lovely family time at the start of this movie. The question I've got for you guys is, a trained group of soldiers are coming to kill you guys. Would you rather have Jason Bourne or Charlie Baltimore both protecting and trying to seduce you?
Jason Bourne, because he's a dude and I like dudes.
I didn't even read the second half. I was just like, Charlie.
Yeah.
Charlie. I knew you would.
But I don't like that blonde hair. That shortcut.
Oh, no, she's hotter with the blonde
long
hair.
I want mom. I want her dressed as a mom. I want her to role play as her mom character and come save me. And then be like, a chef does that. And I'm like, yes, it does. A chef does do that. Let's go. Let's go get naked and Samuel L. Jackson out of the basement. Let's go.
And then seduce you as the mom character. Yeah. And also, why do they have to keep taking off everybody's clothes all the time?
Okay, when she flashed Samuel L. Jackson to rip the Band-Aid off of him.
What the hell?
That's a solid effort, I thought. That's a good idea.
I legitimately thought that I've seen every single facial expression of Samuel L. Jackson ever, and then that one was a new one to me. That was like, wow. The face he makes when he sees her tits was just unreal.
It was like, oh. She doesn't get distracted. Amazing. She's good at her job. I'd trust her to protect me.
That was my other deep philosophical debate was, you know, like, her husband is directing this movie, and the seduction scene in this is incredibly intense. And I'm like, imagine watching that as a husband, right? Watching a wife do that and be like, no, more aggressively. Come on. No, like, really grab at it.
Right. I think at that point, though, because it's so over the top, maybe you're more comfortable with it because you're just like, obviously, this is so not how you act.
Yeah,
true. Versus like a very tender scene.
Yeah, it's totally not how she acts. She's probably like 10 times like crazier than that in the bedroom.
Probably.
One can only hope. Anyway, my next question is that at one point when she's sort of coming back up, you know, like returning to her house, she comes across a kid behind a log who's smoking a cigarette, and she scares him so much that he pisses his pants. Do you guys reckon that kid ever smoked cigarettes again?
Yeah, she threatened to kill him when he was at her house and she was handing out cookies and she was still a housewife. She's like, they'll never find your body or something. And then she sees him again and he's still doing it. I think that kid's dumb. That kid's going to do it again. Or he's going to do it again. Maybe it's like, you know, when people like get themselves in trouble so that Superman has to save them. He's like, I'm smoking again. Where's that hot mom from down the street?
Oh, yeah. I agree. I've got absolutely. It became a full blown fetish after watching Gina Davis smoking. Like he just went, "Oh damn, that!" And now whenever he can't have sex without watching the woman smoking or whatever.
I brought my own cigarettes. Could you please just smoke one of them?
Yeah, that kid was totally into it. 100%. Emily, your questions.
All right. Question number 17, Gina. And Samuel Jackson have delightful chemistry. Are there any other surprising cinematic pairings that you love?
I was struggling to think of this, and I feel like there's plenty, but I just couldn't think of anything really specific. The best ones I could come up with was Julia Roberts and Hugh Grant was surprisingly decent in Notting Hill. Like, I kind of think you originally start watching that, and you think, well, it's not for you, Sam. But it's a good, you know, like, I think they managed to make that work, which I wouldn't have thought they would. The other one I thought of actually was a non-romantic pairing, which was Shawshank Redemption with, Morgan Freeman and Tim Robbins. Like, I don't think you'd immediately go, oh, yeah, those two are going to be, like, best buds. But they work so well together and they have such a good vibe. So that's my other answer.
Yeah, I like that because I feel like we usually get kind of more fun chemistry and, like, bro-y buddy cop stuff, which this kind of was.
Yeah, totes. Yeah,
you redeemed yourself on that one, Liz. Yeah, that was a good answer. I am fully convinced that I've synced up with Emily because I've chucked this in there just to impress Emily. I went with Vin Diesel and Helen Mirren in the Fast and the Furious franchise.
Yes! They have the most romantic chemistry of anyone in any of those films.
100%! Like, even 100%. That little cameo together in that last film, it was like, these two have totally hooked up. These
Vin
two
comes alive.
Yes! The movie just suddenly gets a jolt of passion injected into it. It's bizarre because you wouldn't think that it's, you know, possible, but it's totally those two. 100%.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because Vin's usually like, I'm going to go do a car race. And Helen Mirren's there and he's like, hey. And you're like, oh, somebody brought some energy to the set today for Helen Mirren.
Exactly. 100%.
Perfect. Question number 18. What mundane task would you love to be ridiculously overpowered at, like Gina was with her vegetable dicing?
Folding fitted sheets. Wouldn't that be so convenient if you could just be like, bam, 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 and there's like this perfectly folded fitted sheet. You could make bank with the instructional video for that.
Like any clothes folding, if you could just do it so fast.
Yeah, that's a good one. Definitely, you'd get but literally like especially. Hours of your life back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very convenient.
The one I went with that also get hours of my life back is remembering where things are. I am terrible at remembering things are. Like, especially my own stuff, especially wallets, keys, aspirin inhaler, my phone, everything that I always need when I leave the house and like hay fever medication, all that sort of shit. But to also remember what other stuff is, you know, like where I've seen a kid put something. The number of times Stacey's like, have you seen my glasses? And I'm like, yeah, I have. But I don't remember where I saw them. What are glasses?
That would be pretty good. Yeah. To just for like things around your house memory.
Yeah. One of the major reasons I think Sam has ADHD like me, because that is definitely something that I can totally relate to.
Yeah.
And question number 19, that shot glass thing, why and how and why? Does anyone want to explain it?
I reckon some random on the crew just did it at a cast party as like their party trick, and the director saw it and liked it, and that's my theory.
Who would write it into a script? Who would be like, you know what you should... Can anyone explain what it... I mean, she...
So I've actually looked this up, Emily. I actually have a proper answer for you. So It's actually a CIA or like a spy thing where basically if you've run the shot glass across your cheek, you've got enough time to sniff it and see if there's any poison in it before you drink it.
Whereas if you come on!
And sniffed it.
For a second, I believed you.
It's 100% true. It's 100% true. And it sexually aroused me, so that's why it's in the movie.
It was, like, confusingly erotic where I was like, is it supposed to be? Why is she doing that?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It was, like, it was a confusion boner inducing material. I don't know what the fuck the point of it was, but it was awesome.
When I watched this movie with my dad, I remember feeling uncomfortable when that scene came on. Like, what's happening?
Yeah,
fair enough.
And that takes us down to the end, which is also a Patreon question. This one comes courtesy of our friend here, Emily. And Emily can talk about Tasteless Podcast like she has many times because we love her and we love having her back on here. But she can tell us all about it soon. Her question, which character from this film has probably gone the longest without showering?
I mean, I feel like they're all kind of grody, but I went with that guy, Daedalus, who just like lived in a cabin in the woods just waiting for someone to come do a plan with him.
Oh, he was a scumbag. Yep.
Fair. I'm saying Mitch, because as a private investigator, I feel like he'd find himself in situations where he just couldn't easily shower. And sometimes he'd have to put a like persona on and stuff. And yeah, that guy's definitely gone for days.
100%. Yeah.
You've kind of missed the easy answer there with Mitch, which is the fact that he hires a pair of homeless guys to help him fleece another dude out of money.
Right.
True.
But even then, I was going to go with Brian Cox's mum, who's sitting there with a dog that's been licking itself for 3 hours and whatever it has in there, either is, you know, would have been dislodged hours ago or it's going to be in there permanently.
I thought that was like his wife. You think that was his mom?
She was like ancient, was Emily. Old?
I love how Brian Cox actually looked really old in this movie's really old. So like he looked not that far off what he looked in Succession, but that was like a long time later. Sam, you have a visitor.
Yep, great answers, guys. Anywho, that does take us down to the end. But before we leave, Emily, thank you so much for coming back on. And please tell us all about Tasteless Podcast and where we can find
thank you
and all that sort of fun stuff.
This was a delight. I felt rage. I felt joy. Tasteless, a podcast where I compare two movies. I compare a movie that is critically acclaimed to a movie that is less so. I did do an episode on this where I said why it's better than The Santa Claus as a Christmas movie. But I also am very proud of the most recent episode where I said why Geely is a much better movie than Casablanca.
Eat shit.
Romantic. So... I have incredible taste, obviously. I know what I'm talking about. And you can listen to Tasteless Podcast wherever you get podcasts. And I probably do talk about Gina Davis and her institute more than any other podcast.
Probably. Probably.
Nice.
Hey, Liz, you've actually got something else exciting coming up as well. Do you want to talk about that or should we just wait until that's a little bit more firmed and recorded?
Yeah, I think I'll talk about it in a future thing. Although I can say that one thing that is coming up is totally different from what you're saying, but Caleb and I are in talks to do 50 Shades Darker live reading at Livestream for The Cure. Is that what you were thinking? I don't think so.
I think I've thrown up in my
okay?
mouth. No. Anyway, thank you so much for tuning in. It's been wonderful, as always, to talk with these ladies and talk about this film. If you want to get a hold of us, you can send us an email at miritqs@gmail.com, or you can find us on Twitter/X at MovieReviewsIn or MovieReviewsIn20Qs on all the other social platforms. Got a couple of other episodes in the pipeline that we're sort of working on, but nothing set as of recording. But yeah, anyway, that's thanks from me.
Continue dying. Out.
Oh, thanks, Liz.